A un primero de mayo.
Hello and welcome to the Pick and Pop Podcast. I am your host, Sam Dusenberry Jr. This show is posted up on shillfreesports.com. That's shillfreesports.com. You can follow me on Twitter at the Sam D. That's at TheSamD on Twitter. We're going to recap four games. There was four games of the opening round of the NBA playoffs yesterday. We had the Dubs and the Rockets, the Raptors and the Pacers, Hawks, Celtics, and Thunder and Mavericks, and we'll handle all those games in that order. So, the Dubs. The Dubs went and took care of business. They blew out the Rockets. They got them out the paint very quick. They did what they do best. They chucked up threes, and they kept the pressure on the defenseless Houston Rockets. And, you know, albeit Steph Curry turning his ankle landed on Jason Terry's foot after attempting a three-pointer late in the first half, you know, the Dubs don't need Steph Curry to win this series. The Rockets are a joke. They are a mess. I feel for J.B. Bickerstaff, and I feel for Dwight Howard, who has gone from, you know, this guy was a three-time defensive player of the year to now being a shred of its former self. You know, the beard complained in the postgame after dropping a no comment that it's hard for him to believe that he couldn't get to the free throw one time. You know, he averages 10 a game. He got none. And it wasn't for lack of trying. He still went to the hoop with reckless abandon, trying to draw that forceful contact that he's known for doing, but he just didn't get the call. And when Harden's not getting the call, that messes up the whole Rockets, you know, attempt to play defense because they can't set. You know, if he's not getting those 10 free throws, that's, you know, 10 chances they can't reset. With no Harden getting to the free throw line, those bricks became true bricks, and it just had the Dubs running up and down the court. So, you had Steph, 24 points in 20 minutes. Look, I have my feelings about the Warriors. Look, they broke the Bulls record of 72 wins. I'm not the biggest fan of that, being a lifelong Bulls fan, but I can respect what they've done. To me, this is not the best team of all time or anything close. It's yet to, you know, if they start blowing out teams like this in the playoffs, if they go faux like Moses back in the day with the Sixers, then maybe we can have that conversation then. But right now, they're clearly the best team right now. I think you got the Spurs, obviously, as a team that can beat them in a seven-game series. I'm not sure if OKC can do it. I'm not sure if Cleveland can do it. And that's probably, you know, the reason why the Dubs are in such a great position to win back-to-back titles here. But just to recap game one, Steph turned an angle, came down on Jason Terry's foot, 24 points in 20 minutes, Harden no free throws. His average is 10 a game. He got zero. So that pretty much spells a blowout. And they don't need Steph to beat the Rockets. So that's what happened. We'll see what happens in game two. Steve Kerr said that Steph Curry is questionable. Hard for me to believe that he won't play, but we'll see how that goes. So Toronto. Toronto and Indiana had game one up in the north. You know, Drake is there wearing a camouflage hoodie, courtside. And the Raptors look to be in a good position to take a 1-0 lead. This Pacers team is not that good. But for some reason, the Raptors played like the Raptors the last couple of years when they've made the playoffs and spit the bit at home. So the Pacers take game one, 190. Paul George, you know, to me, top five in this league, top five overall. And my viewpoint of being a top five player is you got to be able to play both ends of the court. Paul George showed everything yesterday. 33 points, 6 assists, 4 steals, and 4 for 5 from 3-point land. And he locked up DeMar DeRozan. And that, to me, is when you're a top five player. You want to throw Steph out there, Steph will give you all the points and all the threes and all the highlights, but he ain't locking nobody. Paul George went out there, dropped 33, and still locked up the Raptors' best offensive player in DeMar DeRozan. Lowry and DeRozan, the vaunted backcourt, shot 8 for 32. 8 for 32. And this is at home. And it's not like, look, you know, DeRozan was locked by Paul George. Paul George is a top five player to me, an elite defender. So, okay, he struggled against DeRozan. Kyle Lowry, who's D'ing him up? Monte Ellis? George Hill? He couldn't get off? He had like 6 turnovers. Bad opening game one performance from Kyle Lowry. And then you throw in DeRozan getting locked down by Paul George and forcing shots left and right. And you know, Frank Vogel. He pulled a Phil Jackson, you know, leading up to game one. Pulled a Phil Jackson from back in the day. Put the little salvo out there that the Raptors get a lot of foul calls. They draw a lot of free throws on ticky-tack calls. And what happens? Game one, the Pacers got to the free throw line more than the Raptors. So I'm not that high on Vogel as a coach, but I will give him a salute for pulling out the Phil Jackson card and getting his guys. I mean, Solomon Hill got to the line 10 times. Are we serious? Solomon Hill. How is he getting to the free throw line more than Paul George? So that shows you how, you know, whether or not that had an impact on the game, to me it seems it has. It's easy to say it didn't, but when Solomon Hill's getting to the line 10 times, I think you need to pay attention. So this begets the thing. Are the Raptors ready? They're the 2 seed. They keep saying that they're ready. They keep saying that they can hang with LeBron and Cleveland in the East. They keep thinking they can make a run. But are they ready? What's this admiration? I mean, you got Corey Joseph dropping 18 points. You're not going to get that every game. You're not going to get Corey Joseph lighting up, you know, the likes of Ty Lawson coming off that Pacer bench. You can't expect that from the likes of Corey Joseph. So what do the Raptors do? I mean, they got Miles Turner for the Pacers, the young phenom. I mean, I like his game a lot. 5 blocks, playoff debut, rookie. Not scared of the spotlight there. 5 blocks. And he was getting buckets in the paint. He's a little skinny, so he got bodied by Valanciunas. He got bodied a little bit. I mean, Valanciunas, he broke some sort of rebound playoff record, which pretty much is meaningless when you look at Raptor playoff history. But, you know, the Pacers here stole one. And I think they could beat the Raptors here. It would not shock me at all if the Pacers take this series, because to me, the Raptors just aren't good enough. They're a great regular season team, but when you get into the playoffs and you can, you know, they're a two-headed monster. So if you can take out DeMar DeRozan, which I think Paul George is going to do here, and Paul George is still going to get off and get his, where was Damari Carroll? You know, if you're, you know, Dwayne Casey, you bring in Damari Carroll and give him all this money. And granted, he's been hurt and he's just coming back, played the last 15 games of the regular season leading into the playoffs here. But still, if you're going to give him 15, 20 minutes on the minute restriction, I want those 15 to 20 minutes when he's D'ing up Paul George. How he's not playing D against, well, I mean, DeRozan's not that great of a defensive player. He's an offensive guy. So the fact that you had DeMar DeRozan out here on an island getting lit up and then locked down by Paul George made very little sense to me. I mean, Paul George in that second half went off. He just decided, I'm the best player on the court, and I'm going to get buckets. And he got buckets, and he made sure DeMar DeRozan was harassed every step of the court on the offensive end. So to me, I think this could be a precursor of an upset here. Although to me, basketball-wise, it would not be an upset. The best player on the court is on the Indiana Pacers and Paul George. So by my logic, they should win. Moving on down to the Dirty South, we had the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics let one get away here. Atlanta took game one, 102-101. You know, Avery Bradley pulled a hamstring. We had to keep track on that. You're not sure what his status will be for game two. But to me, Boston is better than Atlanta. And as much as that doesn't seem to be the case on paper, Atlanta, to me, and much like Toronto, just seem like frauds. Problem is, if the Celtics can't have Avery Bradley going forward, then it's going to be Swiss cheese for them, and Atlanta will go ahead and take care of them in 5, if they're lucky, for Boston, maybe 6 games. So you have the Celtics came out, you know, brick city in the first quarter. Couldn't hit a shot, wide open shots. It wasn't like the offense wasn't working. The shots were there. They just weren't going in. So you have Atlanta getting 23 from Kent Bazemore. Bazemore is giving you 23. I mean, you had Horford and Teague doing what they do. Millsap had a solid game. But you got Bazemore coming up with 23 and 8 rebounds. I mean, Kyle Korver didn't hit a 3. Not one. Kyle Korver didn't hit a 3, and Atlanta still put up over 100 points and got a game one victory. That's not good for Boston. Isaiah Thomas tried as he could. He got very little help. You know, Evan Turner's out here chucking up threes when he's shooting sub 30%. Marcus Smart had a decent game. He actually hit a couple of threes, which is not really his forte. But if Avery Bradley can't go here, I don't know who's going to lock down Jeff Teague. It's just Jeff Teague. As soon as Avery Bradley was on the sidelines, Jeff Teague went to work. And as much as people want to laud Isaiah Thomas, he's not a defensive player. I mean, he's very little. He's an offensive guy. He's a microwave-type player. He has stepped up his game by leaps and bounds this year, but he's still more of an offensive-first player. So if Jeff Teague only has to worry about getting by Isaiah Thomas, and he's going to go off in the rest of this series. So Avery Bradley's injury status will be huge going forward. And then the last game of the night, we had Oklahoma City and the Thunder putting the hammer down on the Dallas Mavericks. This series should be a sweep, maybe five games at the most. 108-70 was the margin of victory, was the score last night for Oklahoma City. You know, the big three did what they were supposed to do for Oklahoma. Durant did what he did, pulling up threes on transition, switching them, Westbrook attacking the cup, dishing it off. And Serge Ibaka, who is one of the keys. He's not the key to me, because obviously you have two top 10, maybe even top 5 players in the league in Westbrook and Durant. But Serge Ibaka has to be that three, that big three. He stepped up, he hit the, he was on the glass, he got three blocks last night. He was very much in the mix here. The defensive presence for Oklahoma was very impressive. Now again, Dallas Mavericks are not that great of an offensive team. I mean, you have Dirk and a bunch of dudes who can try to get their own shot, who can't get their own shot. I mean, you got Wesley Matthews trying to go off the dribble. He's not really that type of player. Deron Williams is a shell of his former self. You know, this is not a good Dallas team. So Oklahoma goes in there and does what they're supposed to do. And again, defense is a key, but Enes Kanter, a double-double off the bench. People like to destroy and make fun of Enes Kanter's defensive ability. Now, I'm not saying he's a great defensive player or even average, but the fact that he gets buckets and can hit the glass, to me, is worthy of him getting more minutes than Steven Adams. I understand you want to start Steven Adams and make him be that defensive presence to kind of establish that early on. But the problem for Oklahoma is that they cannot score if it's not Westbrook or Durant. So if Serge Ibaka goes into a little slump, and he's been spotty this year, if Ibaka goes into a slump and it's not that three in the big three, then you need somebody to give you buckets. And Kanter, if there's anything he can do, is get buckets. So to me, he can hit the glass and he can get buckets. Enes Kanter, to me, it's a big factor for Oklahoma City. Again, I'm not going to say here they're going to go, like, you know, the blueprint for last night means that they can go and step to the Warriors, but it's nice to see Roberson, Adams, Ibaka playing the D that they're supposed to be doing, and then letting Westbrook and Durant do what they do, which is go off and get buckets and set up plays for others. So Oklahoma City, a commanding 108-70 victory and a 1-0 lead in what should be a short series against the Dallas Mavericks. Looking ahead to today's games, you got Cleveland and Detroit, another series that should not take that long. You know, LeBron has his help. His help is healthy. His help is focused. Let's see what he can do. I still feel last year they would have won the championship with a healthy Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. Now he has that. Detroit will play focused. The Cavaliers will have no answer for Andre Drummond inside, and Reggie Jackson can get off against Kyrie Irving because Kyrie Irving is no defensive player. So it will be nice to see what will happen in this series. But to me, when you got LeBron, it really doesn't matter who the Pistons got. I mean, you know, Morris and Stanley Johnson. I mean, there's no real wings out there that can even body or keep up. You know, maybe Tobias Harris will try, but there's nothing there that says to me that Detroit has a chance in this series. So Cleveland will get the series kicked off today, but expect a short series. LeBron will do what he does, triple-double like production. Kyrie will get his buckets on Reggie Jackson, and you would think Kevin Love should be able to find his way to get into the upper teens and hit the glass. Miami, South Beach. Intriguing series. Miami and the Charlotte Hornets. The Charlotte Hornets, Some people are likening them to the Dubs and how they get up and down the court. I think that's a wee bit of a stretch. Kemba Walker does like to chuck it up a la Steph, but he's no Steph by any stretch of the imagination. Nicholas Batum is that Draymond Green-like figure where he could do a little bit of everything. He's kind of been the linchpin that have keyed this success. But Charlotte also has got a low post game. They've got some bigs. They got Big Al Jefferson still down low. Not exactly the guy he has been in the past, but still a respectable player down low on the block that you need to respect. So Hassan Whiteside will have to do his due diligence to bang down low with the likes of Al Jefferson. But Miami should get this series done. It's a 3-6 seeds, you know, matchup here. So I like Wade. Dragic has been really good as of late since, interestingly, since Bosch has been out, Dragic has stepped his game up. His numbers have increased. You know, you got Joe Johnson. I still think he would have been a better fit if he would have went to OKC. He would have been more of a key piece to a championship contender if he would have went to OKC instead of Miami. But he goes to Miami, so now he adds that threat. That three-point threat stretches the floor, gives Dragic and Wade more room to penetrate and kick. So Joe Johnson slotting in being a very vital piece for the Heat's chances here. I like them in this series. It should not go past 6. I would not be surprised if they get it done in 5. Moving over to the Western Conference, the two series that kicks off are the Spurs and the Grizz and the Clippers and the Trailblazers. Both of these series should not last that long. Memphis is, dragging bodies off the street to put on uniforms. So with Pop and the Spurs, this should be a Swiss cheese. They should make quick work of the Grizz here. It's sad that, Marcus Gasol, that you can't get the full complement of Grizzlies. This would be a great series if it was teams at full strength, but the problem is it wouldn't be, a 2-7 matchup if the Grizzlies were at full strength. So you take what you can get. Spurs, if they're smart, will make quick work. So you would think another 5, maybe, if Memphis could somehow gut it out. 6-game series, would not be shocked if it was a sweep. You look for Tim Duncan to be, his minutes will be limited because they won't necessarily need him that much. I want to see Aldridge go off. I think that's something you saw in their only victory against the Warriors in the regular season. Aldridge went off and went off with reckless abandon. He sometimes conforms to the offense too much, and I understand that's the Spurs way. Everybody gets on ball. If everybody touches the ball, it's nice. It's cute. But when you're going up against upper elite teams, sometimes you just got to have a guy that says, I'm better than you, and I'm going to get buckets. And sometimes Aldridge does not bring that. So I want to see Aldridge go at Z-Bo and get buckets. He is better than Z-Bo, although I love Z-Bo and his thugness. LaMarcus Aldridge should run circles around Z-Bo and the other big men. Birdman, come on. So the Spurs should make quick work of the Grizzlies. And then you have another series which should be quick. A lot of quick series here in the first round. The Clippers and the Trailblazers. Look, I am not a fan of Lob City. I'm not a fan of Chris Paul or Blake Griffin, but they are way more talented than the Portland Trailblazers. I applaud the effort that Damian Lillard and McCollum have had here in their first year, sans, LaMarcus Aldridge, but they have no chance in this series barring, the Clippers big three all tearing ACLs. So you look for Paul, Griffin, DeAndre to go off, get some effective lobs, get some effective highlights, and make quick work of the Portland Trailblazers. They might get one game up in Rip City, but if this goes more than 5, then I would be worried about the Clippers long term. So there you have it. You got the Cavs. Should make quick work of the Pistons, 4 or 5 games. Miami, 5-6 games over Charlotte. Spurs, 4 or 5 games over the Grizzlies. And Clippers, 4 or 5 games over the Portland Trailblazers. And before I wrap up this quick first edition of the Pick and Pop podcast, and I am Sam Dusenberry at the Sam D on Twitter. That's the with 2 E's, T-H-E-E-S-A-M-D. Kobe. We got Mamba moments. I've done podcasts in the past and on FanDuel, and I predicted, I said we should get at least 4 Mamba moments in this farewell tour season. We got way more than 4. And to see Kobe jack it up 50 times to get 60 points on his way out the door is more Kobe than anything Kobe could have ever imagined. 50 shots. And these weren't within the offense. This was, you know, him just coming down, over dribbling, trying to cross over dudes, and just pulling up from 18, pulling up from 20, pulling up from 25, long threes, you know, deep corner twos. It didn't matter. It was all going up from Mamba in his last game, as it should have been. So he goes out, 50 attempts, 60 points. Shaq challenged him like a couple of months ago to put up 50. He best him and goes for 60. Amazing what Kobe Bean Bryant does. And now the Lakers have to move on. Kobe Bean Bryant, not the greatest Laker of all time. To me, that still goes to a tie between Magic and Kareem. But definitely of this era, millennials, if you're 25, maybe even 30 and under, all you know is Kobe Bean Bryant. So the Mamba went out his way, jacking it up 50 times with a 60 spot on the way out the door. Yeah, that'll do it for me here. You've been listening to the Pick and Pop Podcast with me, Sam Dusenberry Jr., at the Sam D on Twitter, at THEESAMD. ShieldFreeSports.com is where this podcast will be posted, as well as SoundCloud. Look for it under the name The Pick and Pop Podcast. So I'll be checking in during the week. I'll try to get out maybe Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Try to drop 3 podcasts this week, going through the first round of the playoffs all the way through to the NBA Finals. So again, thank you for listening to the Pick and Pop Podcast. I am Sam Dusenberry Jr., and I'll talk to you next time.